Coming to you live from a llama farm, I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me as always are pygmy hair giraffes. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 783, Slip Slap, Oh Crap!
Welcome back, everybody, to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Very glad to be broadcasting live from Spain today. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we're just real happy to have you here. So welcome. Welcome aboard. Welcome back. Doesn't it feel like you're home? You're warm and safe. You've got a cup of hot cocoa in your hands. Your mom just tucked you in with a blanket by the roaring fire. You're sweating a lot because it's July. Memories.
If that's not your exact situation right now, please turn off the podcast and wait until it is. Then you can listen to this episode.
Thank you. Now that those people are all gone.
Those people.
Right? Let's get started today. We got a great show for you today. Lots of bands and visiting celebrity guests. But first, we're going to talk about a board game.
Which board game are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about 2016's hottest new release. Maybe. I don't really know if that's true. But it was released in 2016 and my copy was warm when I got it. Captain Sonar is the name of the game that we're discussing today.
This may be the first time that we've reviewed a board game that was actually new to anyone but us.
Yeah, we're bad at, what's the thing we're bad at?
Life.
Yeah, that's true. So Captain Sonar is a new release this year that just came out and is recently available to buy and play. In which two teams of up to four players take control of submarines and fight one another in an undersea battle.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's the whole premise. Each player takes on a different role in controlling the submarine, either captain, first mate, engineer, or radio operator. Radio operator? Radio operator.
Sonar. Radio? Radio? Yeah.
I think it's radio.
Whatever.
Each role has a different little dry erase sheet that you draw on to use it. With a little dry erase pen, you've got a little barrier between you and the other team so you can't see each other. And the way it works, is that the captain shouts out which direction the sub is going to go. Say north, or perhaps east, maybe south, never west. You can go west, it's fine. And then the captain has to wait while the first mate charges one system and the engineer marks one system to be worn out. Then they can go again. Meanwhile, the radio operator is listening to the other team's captain shout and tell where they're going, and is drawing on a clear plastic sheet that goes over his board, which shows the map of the islands you're fighting around, and is trying to figure out, based on the directions the enemy submarine took, where on the board that submarine is. You can never cross your own path. The captain is also drawing his path on his own board, his own little map. You can never cross your own path, and eventually, as more and more systems wear out for the engineer, you might not be able to do things you want to do, like use your sonar or your drones to identify where the opposing sub is, or fire your torpedoes to blow them up, and have to surface to repair yourself.
They are poorly designed submarines.
They are not good submarines.
Every time you move, something breaks.
Yeah. And that's essentially it. There's I think, five or six different maps you can play, with decreasing number of islands and increasing numbers of special rules to make, you know, this even more complex than it is. It's played in real time.
It can be played turn-based, but yeah. We haven't done that because it didn't sound fun.
Well, yeah, usually I think the turn-based play is more for if you have a really small number of players, so it would be impossible to do everything fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that a decent rules summary?
Yeah, I think it bears mentioning that when you surface and everything gets repaired, it wipes out your path so far, so you can then go back over spaces you've been in before.
And which just plays havoc with the opposing radio operator.
It is true.
It's not fun for them.
But there is a weird mechanic where you have to draw an outline around a part of the sub and initial it, and then all the outlines have to be checked by the opposing sub's engineer.
Yeah.
Before you can successfully,
dive
again?
Dive again, yeah.
So it can leave you as a sitting duck, especially if, as in our last play, one of your team members has an unnaturally shaky hand.
Yeah, that was rough.
It's a pretty good mechanic, actually. I like it. It's simple enough, but it still makes it like, is this really worth doing right now?
Right. But oftentimes you would find, so So kind of to back up a step before we talk about oftentimes the best strategies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really like Captain Sonar a lot. I had a great time with it. It's very intense. The experience is almost draining. It's so, it pulls you in so hard.
Uh-huh.
The comment that really summed it up for me, the experience was we finished one game, one time we played it, and our friend Devin leaned back in his chair and goes, I think I need a cigarette after that. And it really is. Like, it's a very...
Visceral.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. Visceral type of game. You're very focused. You're very pulled into your role. There's a lot of tension at the table, but it's a good kind of tension. You feel very invested in what's going on in your pretend submarine. And that's what I want out of my pretend submarines.
It's a lot like a computer game we've talked about called Artemis, where you all work mm-hmm. together and man different stations to control a starship. And it was fun to be able to do it on a smaller scale. So we've played Artemis many times, and we've had, I think, as many as 7 people
mm-hmm.
playing, all just manning one ship against computers and trying to get to a point where we could conceivably have 2 separate crews. I think we've done it once or twice.
Right.
But it's a lot harder to get there where with Captain Sonar, it's simpler. I wouldn't say it's simple, but it's mm-hmm. simpler. You can do it with fewer people. It's possible to man a couple stations if necessary.
Right.
And that gets you to a point much more readily where you can play several games of this in a row and have a fun time with it, manning your submarines.
Yeah, that was one of my big worries in buying Captain Sonar is that the full game is 8 players, 1 person on each station on 2 submarines, each of 4 stations on 2 different subs.
Yep.
And that's a lot of people to get together for a board game day. So we've only ever actually played, I think the max we've gotten is 6 at one go.
Mm-hmm.
But the game still plays really well, even at those smaller player counts. I was concerned that we were never going to really get much out of it.
Yeah.
Because those smaller player counts wouldn't be fun, but 6 played really good, I thought.
Yeah.
And we've played it with 5, where one player has one sub only has 2 people on it,
mm-hmm.
and that works very well. It's still a lot of fun. It's a different experience at that point. But so,
you want to go over the 4 roles?
Yeah, let's go through the 4 roles, reiterate what they do, and talk about a little bit what that experience is like. So,
sure.
So the main role, the driving force of each sub is the captain.
Mm-hmm.
So the captain has a map of the battlefield in front of him or her. And is drawing their route on it. You say, I'm going to go north. It's got a dot grid on it. So you mark your starting location. You say, we're going north. You draw a line to the next dot north. The enemy radio operator listens and draws something. And
so it's important. The enemy radio operator does not know your starting location.
Right.
So in trying to trace your route, they're also having to try to figure out where you began on the board so mm-hmm. they can figure out where you are.
Yep.
So they can target you.
Yeah. Then you have to wait for your first mate and your engineer to announce that they've completed their tasks, and then you can move again. You also have to talk to them to make sure they're charging systems you want and not damaging systems you want to use.
Yep.
So there's a lot of whisper, don't do that. Don't do that. Do this between you and
the
other.
Can't go this direction because if you do that, this is the only thing left I can damage on right. that section.
So there's a lot of, so the captain has to hold a lot of information in his or her head at once. Like, what have I told these people? What information do they have? What are they trying to do? And also, what are they telling me? And what is my radio operator figuring out? So it feels like to me, for some reason, people make me play leadership positions a lot in these games.
It's because we know you want to.
It's because they know I want to desperately in the bottom of my soul. I don't know if I'm actually any good at it, but it's a really interesting challenge because the actual mechanics of what you as the captain have to do are very limited. I would say they're probably the simplest of the 4 stations. Is that fair?
I think so, yeah.
But the amount of probabilities and information you have to hold in your head at once is a lot.
It weighs
on you as you try to puzzle out where to go next and balance all the different stuff that's going on around you. It's really a challenge.
I think you might not perceive this as much, and I think that might be in part why you want to do the leader role and other people are happy to let you.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot more pressure on the captain, whether or not you're actually in charge of all of the things that allow your team to win or lose the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a perception that that is the case because you're the captain.
Right.
And so even if really, like, one of our opposing team's captains does quite well by really just boating around in a weird spiral and with almost no plan until they're pretty sure they know where we are. And so her choices of which way to go with the sub are really not strategic at all as far as except, don't run into my own path or mm-hmm. a solid object. And yet it goes very well. But I think I or Gary or several others would probably kind of start to enter panic mode, just being like, which is the better way to go, and waste time sitting there overthinking.
Sure.
So you don't seem to have that problem.
Are you calling me decisive?
I don't know. I think maybe too dumb to realize. No.
Yeah, but you're right. There's a certain... It's a balance between I need to keep... My first mates need to charge things in mind. And my engineers need to damage things in mind. Because he's a terrible engineer. But also, I can't have those so far in the front of my mind that I don't keep moving. Because if you sit still, you're not doing anything. You're not getting any closer to victory. And they're gradually narrowing down where you could be.
Yeah.
Via their own tools.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a weird balance between just being like, screw it, we're going north. And if we go north, how bad is that going to wind up being?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm actually the right choice for that role, but it works. It's fun. I have a lot of fun with it. So that's an important part with board games.
We did all right.
Yeah. So that's the captain. The second role on the sub is the first mate, who has the sub's five different systems that it has, and has to charge one of them. Every time you move. So you put one tick mark on it, and different systems take different numbers of tick marks to charge. You can drop a mine next to your sub, and then it floats there, and you can detonate it later on if you want to. Both the captain and the first mate can command that system to happen. You can fire a torpedo. It moves up to four spaces away from you, and deals two damage to a sub on a direct hit, or one damage if the sub is just adjacent to where it explodes. Subs have four damage they can take before they die.
Do mines always just do one?
Nope, mines are the same as torpedoes in damage.
Okay.
You can charge your sonar, which is... Oh, the sonar is fun. Either the first mate or the captain can initiate it. And the sonar forces the other team to give you two pieces of information. Either the row that they're in, the column that they're in on the board. And it's just an A through a letter number combination for those.
Just like Battleship.
Yeah, like Battleship. Or the sector they're in. The map is divided into nine sectors numbered 1 to 9. They have to give you two pieces of information from among those three, one of which has to be true and one of which has to be a lie, which narrows down kind of where they are,
yeah,
but also kind of doesn't and makes your radio operator hate you forever. You can launch a drone into the sky to look for them, and then you just pick a sector 1 through 9 and they tell you truthfully if they're in that sector.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also rig silent running. It takes the longest to charge, but it lets you move four spaces in one direction, or I'm sorry, up to four spaces in one direction, without telling the
other
enemy,
team,
telling the opponent. So you could move not at all, which is actually an entertaining strategy. You're like, engage silence, and then you don't do anything. And they're like, oh, he could be any... There's a lot of places he could be now, and we just don't know.
Yep.
It's pretty cool. So the first mate charges those and can trigger either the drone or the sonar on his or her own initiative.
Mm-hmm.
The first mate is the role we've never actually had a dedicated player for, because it's the easiest for the captain to also do if you have too few players for a full sub. Like mm-hmm. And I feel like it's the one that if I were playing it by itself, I would feel like had the least for me to do and was the least engaging.
I don't know if that's actually the case. So one of the things that the game does that seems kind of silly and unnecessary at first, and then you play it and you realize, no, this makes perfect sense, is create a seating order for you.
Call.
And so the captain... As we played it, I think it goes captain, first mate, engineer, radio operator, right?
No, I think it's radio operator, captain, first mate, engineer.
Okay.
I think it's the engineer who's off by himself.
Whatever the case, the engineer is at least one person separated from the captain.
Yes.
And so when you're playing with the captain also being the first mate, your engineer and captain are right next to one another. And so the captain can just look over at the mm-hmm. engineer's chart, see what is damaged. And basically all the engineer has to do is mark things and maybe pick which system gets damaged when you move in a given direction, but the captain can just look over and give input directly.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a person in between you,
oh yeah,
now you need to communicate, and you're going to end up communicating through the first officer, which gives the first officer something to do,
mm-hmm.
but also adds a level of difficulty. So now having, I think it balances the game really well, because it makes it so that having four players doesn't make it too much easier to run the sub,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't make any one role too simple.
Sure.
Because it changes them.
No, that's a really good point.
Except for the radio operator, which is kind of just doing his thing.
Right. We should mention here too that the entire game has this sort of weird metagame to it where you need to talk to each other. You need to give each other a lot of information, but the other team is right there on the other side of the little screen.
And
from
you don't want them to hear you.
Yeah, which makes it feel very much like you're in Hunt for Red October.
Yeah.
Whispering, because you're like, you don't want to have sound.
Give away your position.
Yeah, for the enemy sonar to pick up. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's a great example of... It's not even a mechanic, really. It's just the nature of the game tying in really nicely with the theme and the gameplay to make a visceral experience.
And another significant similarity to Artemis, I guess probably any... Space Alert is like this, too. When you have a lot of people trying to work together in real time to do something, but you... Especially when you have a captain or someone who's in charge, someone who's running things, who needs to be getting information from everyone... You have this situation where, first of all, you want to get your thing out and be like, I need to tell you this, you need to know this, or I need this answer. But now you've also got this team just across the table from you. And so you want to be quiet so they don't hear that you're like, hey, we're not going to be able to do silent running if you do this. But you also want to be loud enough that he hears you, the captain hears you before the radio operator interrupts with his own question or whatever it is. And so you need to be loud enough to be heard, but you need to be quiet enough not to be heard.
It's the sort of thing that is both a lot of fun, and the whole time you do it, you're like, I can see like people in leadership training courses doing this.
Oh yeah.
As a exercise in several different things at once.
Patience.
Patience, not strangling one another.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the captain and the first mate, to get back to what we were doing. The third role is the engineer, who is responsible for breaking the sub as it drives around. Each time you've got four boxes on your engineer board, north, south, east, and west, and each time you move in a given direction, you break one thing in the box of that direction. It might be you, and if a thing is broken, you can't use it. So if yours, so there's icons for scanner or sonar and drones. Weapon systems, so both mines and torpedoes, or silent running. And if you have even one of those crossed out anywhere on your board on the engineer, you can't use that system. Which leads to the entertaining case of the captain going, "Fire torpedoes!"
And the engineer going, "We actually can't. We can't do that.
We can't. You can't fire. There's no torpedoes. You can't fire them. You can't shoot at them."
Which is embarrassing because, other than the directions that you're moving your sub, saying things like fire torpedoes using a system is the only, what are some of the only things you say loud enough for the other team to hear.
Right.
And so you do like say fire torpedoes because you're like, yes, I've charged them up enough. I can finally do something. And you're like, I need the other team to hear me. So they stop what they're doing so I can shoot at them. And then you're like, all right, something's happening. And your engineer's like, actually, you're a worse captain than you thought you were. Yep.
it's like letting the air out of a balloon a little bit. Yeah. At that point, you're just like, so the engineer has a couple... The engineer can also... Doesn't just break things. You can also repair things by getting the captain to go in certain directions. There are lines drawn connecting different icons among the four directions on your engineer board. And if you cross out everything connected by a given line across the multiple directions you can go, you repair all of those things.
So if you break everything in a system, that system then gets repaired.
It's like how... If you have enough stuff, if you run your computer for long enough, and it'll reboot, it will eventually.
It'll just do it.
It'll just do it for you, and then it'll be fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. You also have little radiation icons on those boards.
Real quick, it's the sort of system that works very well for the game that I could never in 100 years have come up with because it makes no sense.
Yeah, it's complete gibberish.
I'm terrible at coming up with mechanics that I can't excuse with the storyline or the world that we've built.
You also have little radiation icons on your board, which are great because they don't disable any system, but they're terrible because as soon as you check all of them off across the entire board, your sub takes a damage.
Well, additionally, there are also things along the bottom by the radiation icons that will break a system, or will break a... This is a terminology problem. Will break your weapons or your sonar or whatever, but are not connected to one of the system lines.
So, they're like permanent.
So if you break it, it's broken until you surface. And you can do that, but you might regret it later.
You might. It's bad. So the engineer has this horrible puzzle where you're like, you don't have any control of where the sub goes. Like, if the captain says you loudly declares we're going west and west damages the sub, now you don't have any options. You're just like, nope, we just went west and broke the sub. You just announced it. We took damage. So you have to be constantly communicating to the captain. You can go west one more time. Don't do it, though.
Yeah.
You know, but without giving away the game to the opposing team and while making sure the systems you really need to use at that point in the game are charged when you need them. Or, I'm sorry, not charged, available.
Yeah.
Because you can have mines charged for days if it's broken.
You just still can't use them.
You just
them.
Still can't use it. It's... Oh! Engineering was what I thought was going to be really boring to do by itself. Because the first time I got to play it, it had to be doubled up with the captain because of the number of players we had.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun by itself.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I can only imagine it's more nerve-wracking if you have that... If you're two spaces removed from the captain trying to communicate via the first mate. Ooh, good stuff. So the final position that we haven't talked about yet is the radio operator. And the radio operator is a position I don't know a lot about because I'm not allowed to play as the radio operator anymore.
You did it though, right?
Oh, I think I did once, the second round.
No. You never played as radio operator with me. But don't you know you're not allowed to play it because you have played it?
Yes, I'm not...
You are no longer allowed to play.
I am no longer allowed to play as the radio operator. True. I have never felt such blind rage while playing a board game as I have while playing the radio operator. I believe at least one point I looked up over the screen, looked the captain in the windows of her soul and said, bullshit, you can't move that direction. That's not true. They're like, okay, I think we're done with Captain Sonar for a while there. So the radio operator has a map of the same islands as the captains do, and has a clear plastic sheet over it, and they're drawing out what the other captain did as they move around, just trying to puzzle out where that captain is based on their navigation and the position of islands and what's possible. It's really hard. It's really, really hard.
I only played the radio operator once, and I had a very easy time of it because I made an extremely lucky guess as to their starting position,
mm-hmm.
and... Then the captain of the other boat did a lot of like squiggly move around the board moves that could only have been possible given the layout of the islands in two quadrants on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, it's one of these two. And then they did something that was like, it's definitely this. And then they did silent running. And I was like, maybe I won't be able to figure it out. But then we immediately got it with a drone. Mm-hmm. And so I, from the beginning of the game, always knew pretty much exactly where they were.
Yeah.
And every time we needed to do something, I could just say to the captain, I am 99.9% certain that this is their exact position, not mm-hmm. just this is the quadrant that they might be in.
Right. Yeah, and that initial lucky guess can make a huge difference.
Yeah.
The radio operator is cool. Like, it's probably the part of Captain Sonar, I think, that stands out the most. Like, because it's very different from a lot of game mechanics. I don't know that I've seen something like this before.
Mm-hmm.
And it puts you in a very intriguing place where you've got the same game everybody's playing where you're trying to whisper information to your captain without giving away that you know where they are.
Uh-huh.
And you're trying to also listen with one ear to the other sub and figure out where they are. But you're at the same time trying to know, you need to know where your sub is. So you're paying attention to where the captain is moving,
yeah.
kind of. So you know if you're close enough to be like, you could torpedo them right now. It's so good. It's so good. And it's incredibly frustrating when you lose track of them and have to erase your entire line and start over from the get-go.
Yeah.
And it's baffling to me because when I radio operate, the one time I was permitted to do it, I've just got the line of where they are and I'm trying to make educated guesses and whatnot, but there's not much there.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked over to other people radio operating and seen like all this freaking M.C. Escher diagram with all of these like these quantum possibilities of where they might have gone when they rigged silent running and dotted lines showing where they might have placed mines and just ridiculous amounts of information. I'm like, how can you keep that keep track of all of that?
I'm baffled that you wouldn't be able to, because that seems just like the sort of like I play with Excel for fun bullcrap that you're into.
It might just be that it might be one of two things. One, I was having a rough week that week, so yeah. I might not have had the brain space to do it. Or two, it might be just the real time thing.
Uh-huh.
Because when I'm fiddling with Excel, I have all the time in the world to make my formulas work.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm doing design stuff that's like that, I can just keep iterating and reiterating without any pressure. But the pressure of them constantly saying stuff and trying to keep all of that stuff in real time collapses my ability to keep track of it. One of those two things. Like I was watching Devin do it once when I was captain and he was radio operating, and he's got like a table in the top corner of his sheet where he's keeping track of some kind. I didn't even know what he was doing up there. We won, so it must have worked. But it's a really interesting and different role, and I think it can it appeals to some players that might not enjoy other parts of board gaming. I think it's kind of, if you can get them in, it's so cool. And it feels amazing as the radio operator, as the rest of the crew, when the radio operator's like, here's their location. And you're like, do we have torpedoes charging? Like, yeah. And they're like, and they're not broken? Yeah. Fire torpedoes. G7. And the other team's like, direct hit.
I actually didn't, I didn't have that because there were five or six. I felt very separate from the two of you, the other two on the team. And I would be like, I know, like, they're here. And the captain at the time would just be like, okay. And then not do anything. And part of sometimes it was because he had not prepared anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent the first half of the game like with no torpedoes charged and no mines to drop. And it was just like, well, that's good information to have, but we're not going to do anything about it.
Right.
And then I just go back to listening to them for a while. And then I'd look back and see you two talking about something and be like, you guys have any systems ready yet? Because, you know, I still know exactly where they are. We did win, but I think we could have won considerably earlier in the match.
Was I captaining that time?
No,
or?
You were the engineer.
Oh, gotcha.
So that's the basic idea. That's the nitty-gritty of Captain Sonar in real time.
In case you guys couldn't figure it out, I really like this game a lot.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I feel like its replay value is limited by the number of maps available.
True.
Like, we played, what, four times?
We played all but the last map, so I think that's four.
Yeah, and so there's only five maps?
There's five different maps you have available so far.
And, like, by the time we got to the fifth one, I was like, I don't, because the maps scale difficulty, too, and I don't want to do that one. It doesn't sound fun. It doesn't sound interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I would do three or four more at, you know, like an intermediate difficulty, but they don't have those maps. And I wouldn't want to do the same map again several times.
Sure.
Even though your different starting location changes it enough that it might be different. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want it to look different. Just make more maps. I think that alone would change it enough that I would be more inclined to be like, well, let's not go to the harder level. Let's just play a few more at this level. But that wasn't really an interesting option. So by the time we finished four, we're like, we go on to the next one. I was still enjoying the game, but I wasn't like, yeah, let's do that. I was like, I'd rather not do that.
So for reference, episode map four introduces an ice cap, so you can't surface as freely. There's gaps in it where you can surface safely, but otherwise you take damage for surfacing, which limits some of your options. And map five, which we've never played yet, introduces neutral mines that are on the board at the start of the game, and that either team can detonate.
Yeah.
I
don't feel like that's an interesting addition.
I want to try it.
Yeah, and we need to just to know.
But. Yeah, but nothing. But it doesn't excite. You're right. It doesn't. That particular mechanic doesn't jump out at me.
That feels to me more like, at that point, any damage you really take that's not a torpedo or a dropped mine is just like, well, you lucked out.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, yeah, pretty much, because your movement is so limited by the different systems and stuff that we discussed,
right,
that you can't just make a point of moving and not being near mines.
I feel like there is some interesting design space left in the game, though, aside from just shuffling around the islands and doing different maps.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we haven't talked about yet is that there's a sixth system on your systems board for the first mate, which is scenario-specific systems.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And that's how you detonate the mines in that scenario we were just talking about, but that's the only scenario that uses them right now.
And okay, I see.
And I feel like there's a lot of space there to just have weird off-the-wall systems that change the game in ways that are more interesting than just neutral mines.
Who published this?
I can't think of the name off the top of my head.
It wasn't a Kickstarter, though, right?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. I'm a little annoyed then, I guess. In our design discussions, we discussed this sort of thing, but it's usually not so blatant. To be like, here's an obvious point for expansion to happen, so we can build onto the game later. But they were like, here's an obvious point for expansion that we're only going to use for one thing ever in the base game.
It's sure.
Basically just saying, hey, here's how we can money gouge our customers. And like, I understand, and I would understand more if it were a Kickstarter, because the game components are very nice.
Yes.
They're quality. They have to be reusable. You're writing on them. They put a very nice glossy finish on the maps.
The giant screen that goes across the table.
Yeah.
It's almost comically
very,
nice.
Very high quality.
Yeah. It's nicer than any Dungeon Master screen I've ever had.
Yeah.
And it will cover, I think it'll probably cover an 8-foot table.
It's two screens,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah, it's two screens that I think you could stretch to cover.
Yeah, they're like four, are they four panels?
Four panel.
They're four panels, they're so huge. Basically a standard game board.
With very cool art on them.
That size, four wide, there are two of those. Mm-hmm. So it's like if your game came with Arkham Horror and an expansion, except it expands only on one axis.
I think you're right in spirit, but wrong in intensity, I guess I would say, about criticizing them about the scenario-specific one. Like, I agree. I would have loved for, instead of the ice cap thing, to have two scenarios that use the scenario-specific thing.
Uh-huh.
I guess I'm not as frustrated. I guess wrong was too strong of a word then. I'm not as frustrated about it as you sound.
I'm not really frustrated. I'm annoyed by the concept. I don't know why they did it, and so I can't really make a judgment. I just think, like, the better way to go, even if that was your plan, to not just communicate it to everyone that's like, we plan to have you spend more money on this game, don't call it scenario. Call it remote detonator and say that doesn't work until this scenario. And then when a new thing comes out, just release cards that cover up a system and say, cover the remote detonator thing with this card. That's your new system.
I don't know. I almost like the openness, because it also, and this is probably more a looser interpretation than I think anybody but me is going to like. I like
come up with your own scenario.
Yeah, you can.
But then it should encourage that. Is that in the rules? Is there a thing that says, and by the way, make up your own. Here's some suggestions.
I don't know if there's something explicitly in the rules for that, but like, to me, the fact that it's called scenario specific immediately suggests that, just like, oh, if you have an idea, go for it. Give it a try. I feel like that's one of the cool things about board games as a thing to do, is that they're very easy to house rule.
Yeah.
And to pulse or to make additions to them.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. Yeah.
So I guess
you're right, but I just tend to assume that other people are evil jerks.
That's fair. When and if they release expansions, I'll absolutely go for it. I mean,
yeah.
I'll go broke buying crap for this game. I was so happy with it. But did you have something to add on Captain Sonar at this point?
I mentioned the kind of low replay ability.
I don't know. I feel like there's even if you go back to the earlier scenarios, like the simpler maps that are just so the first three maps just reduce the number of islands, so it's a little harder to puzzle out where they are based on their route. I feel like those even have a fair bit of replay, because the game itself, the game of cat and mouse of two subs chasing each other around, like, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I said that. I like.
Sure.
I know it won't be the same game over and over again, because just your starting position alone changes the game so vastly, but it just doesn't draw me in.
That's fair.
I want it to trick me into being a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So, even if the map, this would be a pain in the ass, but even if the map, you know, the nine, I guess they're not quadrants because there's nine of them, but the nine sections of the board were tiles, and you could just I know then drawing on them would be a pain. I know.
Sure,
but
yeah.
If you could set them up differently, it could be the same amount of stuff. I rotated some of them, or they're in a different order. That is enough for me to be like, okay, this is a different game. Let's keep playing it at level one for nine rounds before we go on to
Fair
the next
enough.
One. I'm fine with that. So it's not a real criticism. I think the game is good.
Would you say the differences between, like, it's a difference between you would suggest playing Captain Sonar versus you would be happy to play it if somebody else brought it up, but it wouldn't be your first thing to be
That's
like,
where I am
Let's
right
go
now,
for
I
it.
Think. Yeah.
See, I think I'm one step up from you. I would be like,
I know.
I would suggest Captain Sonar.
And then cry if we decided not to play it.
I
think you're like nine steps up.
I would be like, it's definitely a game I like a lot. That's fair. The other thing that I think is really cool that Captain Sonar accomplishes is that the different roles in the game seem to appeal in weird ways to people. Like, it's surprising to me what kind of roles different people like in Captain Sonar, and like which people in our gaming group have really dove on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, the last time we played, we started playing it early in the day, and my wife didn't get home until later, and she was a little upset that we'd played it before she got home.
Mm-hmm.
and that she didn't get to play that day. So I felt bad about that. But like, it's a little strange because it's kind of, it feels like it should be a gamer's game, kind of like a big nerd game. But my wife, who is not a huge nerd like I am, she showers far more than I does. That's a joke. But she's really into it. She really likes it a lot. And she really likes the radio operator role.
That's an easy one, though. That is a role that requires minimal interaction with other people and is probably, unless you've pulled a Tom and way over invested in what you thought was right, mm-hmm. that's the least, I feel like the role with the least pressure on you, because all you have to do is listen. And if mm-hmm. you listen and do your best and still get it wrong, well, you did what you could with the information that you had. Where if you're the captain or the engineer and you make mm-hmm. a move or knock out a system that was not optimal, you're the one who borked the thing. I feel like that's pretty... Now, your wife, to be fair, is an enigma because she also, for God knows what reason, enjoyed playing the one that I always forget the name of because I don't care about it because I find it boring. Space, too many tokens, cubes.
Eclipse.
Yeah, she enjoyed that.
Yeah, we've played it one-on-one.
Why on earth would anyone, let alone a non-gamer, enjoy Eclipse? So... I don't know how much that's...
That's why I married her right there.
That's the only reason.
No, that's fair. Yeah, I guess it surprises me in that Captain Sonar feels like a game that should only appeal to super nerds. Because uh-huh. It's a real-time submarine fighting game, but it pulls in even not nerd people. And, like, a lot. Like, not just like, oh, this is a game I'm willing to play to indulge your smelly nerdiness. This is a game, like... I'm a little upset that I didn't get to participate in.
Yeah, I guess I agree with your point that people are disappointed that they would miss out on it. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a gamer's game, and I'm not surprised that people would be disappointed. Because I feel like on its own, real time already, like the problem, I would say probably the main problem, non-gamers, mm-hmm. in air quotes that you can't see because this is an audio medium, mm-hmm. The main problem with board games for non-gamers is turns.
No? Okay.
If you get rid of turns, you open up a world of things that people who play video games are more open to. They already understand a lot of mechanics, things that do damage, things that have armor, things mm-hmm. that take longer than other things to do, you know, take,
sure.
you know, that kind of thing. It's just waiting for 9 other people at the table to do their thing while you just sit there and watch and
well,
wait.
Well, but hold on. Flip side, though. Do you feel like, I mean, like the two other big real-time games, board games we've done are Space Alert
uh-huh.
and Time and Space.
Mm-hmm.
Are all real-time games space-related? No, Captain Sonar.
No, this is a game about submarines.
Right. You guys don't find that as funny as I do because you can't see just the pure happiness in Johannes' face as he calls me a moron on the air. But I mean, I feel like those games aren't like, I feel like, I mean, like Alphonse is a big nerd and he doesn't like either of those very much.
It's because he has ADHD and does not do well with, I think he would probably have the same issues with Captain Sonar that he has with Time and Space. Or Space Alert, because it's trying to listen to too many things and being frustrated with someone on your team who is worse at their job than you are.
That's fair.
It's not as pronounced in Captain Sonar, probably.
Have we ever played Space Alert with my wife?
I don't think she's played it with us.
I don't think so either. We should try that we should try that as a controlled experiment to find out if real time is really the distinction between defective people like you and I and normal human beings.
Well, another thing that... the Captain Sonar has going for it is that you're still fighting someone else, and so the conceit of most multiplayer video games is fight someone else and win against them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little harder for a person with Halo or Unreal Tournament or whatever it is as mm-hmm. their main game to come to the table and play a game like Time and Space where you're competing but you can't hurt one another,
mm-hmm.
or a game like Space Alert where you're all working together to try to fight
sure.
things that are stronger than you that come out of the sky and you can't ever really meaningfully upgrade your ship until you are an unstoppable juggernaut. So okay. I think the real-time thing is not probably not the thing that makes it too board gamey for other people.
Although it does help. It does. Oh, the compression of time that you're not waiting for other people to do their
thing. Yeah, that's the flip side. I'm saying I think it actually makes it more accessible.
Okay.
It's just now other elements can go one way or the other.
Gotcha. That was a very smart people conversation. Also, kind of condescending to my wife, so sorry, hon, if you ever listen to this.
She doesn't, please, and I don't think she'd care.
Please stay married to me.
If we made a real-time game about horses and then played it without her, she'd probably be real mad.
She'd be a little upset.
And I would be real mad because we had made a game about horses.
What if we made
a... Unless it was a game about slaughtering horses.
I was going to say, what if we made a game where
But she wouldn't want to play that.
Where you fight horses. Like, not slaughter them, just you fist fight them.
Is it like man versus horse?
Yeah.
Not horse versus horse.
You're a man
uh-huh.
in an arena, and horses are released into that arena, and they're crazed with lust for your blood, and you have to defeat them with your hands.
That'd be tough.
It's My Dad, the board game.
Let's make it.
My dad once defeated a horse in hand-to-hand combat.
Twice. He once did it twice.
Consecutively.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Captain Sonar.
I give it 2 thumbs up. Those are the thumbs that I have.
Yeah, I'm very happy with my purchase. I feel like it's going to get a fair bit of play over the years. And what's really cool about Captain Sonar, I think, aside from all of the other things that I've said are cool about it, is that Each station offers a very, I don't know if I want to say different experience, but it's an experience that appeals to you in a different way. Does that make sense? Is that a gibberish thing to say? Am I just talking for the sake of talking?
I think I might need you to clarify. So you could just be talking for the sake of talking.
That's fair. So it's like, I mean, in all cases you are, excuse me, you're thinking, this is my sub. This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to blow up the other team. I need to listen to the other team, and I need to listen to what we're doing and interact that with my board in a way that is effective for us to accomplish our stuff. And I need to talk to my players on our team without giving clues to the opposing team.
Mm-hmm.
So the overall game of navigate your sub around or of drive your submarine around without giving away what you're doing to the opposing team is always there with all 4 roles. They just touch on it in very different ways.
Mm-hmm.
That appeal to different kinds of players is really cool. And I think you can, well, like when we were, when you and I were, when we were playing the other weekend, it was me, you, and our friend Calvor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Calvor. Well, that'll be his nickname. That's his name now. And it was a very different submarine when I was captaining versus when you were captaining.
I never captained.
Oh, I thought you did once.
Nope.
Oh, versus when Calvor was captaining. Like, that's a different kind. That's a very different experience, even with the same players trying to do more or less the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really neat how it recombines simple elements into a very, very different and very, very fun play experience. I like it a lot. I'm really, I'm really pumped on Captain Sonar.
If you hadn't noticed.
If you hadn't picked up on that already.
So we know we've gone quite long on this segment, but the next one is quite short, so hopefully we won't take up any more of your time than we usually do. Hopefully if you view this podcast as taking up your time, you probably stopped listening.
You could probably do something else. But I am happy to take up your time. That's how I sustain myself.
That's true. He's also happy to take up my time.
I
was going to try to tell you people who made this game, but I don't know how to pronounce most of it. The designers were Roberto Fraga, Johan looks like a Lemonier, Lemonnier, and the publisher could be Matago, or Matagot. Who knows what language this even is? Matagot. You can get it in all the places where fine board games are sold.
Yep. You'll have fun. It's a good time. If you can get enough players to actually play it. The one thing we can't say is that the real time version, or not the real time, the turn based version, we can't say anything about it because we've never tried it.
Our friend whose pretend podcast name escapes me,
Gary?
Devin. How could I forget Gary? Devin has played the turn-based game and said he did not care for it. And he really likes the real-time game.
Yeah, we had a lot
for whatever that's worth.
Wait, Devin has a pretend podcast?
No, he has a pretend podcast name, which is Devin.
Oh, I get it. He has a name that is pretend that we call him when we refer to him on the podcast. I get it now. I understand the concept.
Well, I've been Johannes Stauffer, and Tom's been dumber than a bag of wet rocks. And this has been the Mildly Alarming Podcast.
Okay, bye.
we do need to say the stuff.
Oh, we have to say the stuff?
Because we're not going to say it at the next segment.
Oh, that's right.
So if you think Tom is dumber than a bag of wet rocks, you could tell us that or other things that he is more or less dumb than on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You could do it by email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You could do it on the website in the comments section at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or Google Play Music.
Or you could just sail your submarine deep under the sea, perhaps even 20,000 leagues beneath it.
If there are that many leagues.
There might not be, and you would encounter us in the form of a giant squid.
And then you could just tell us.
Yeah, you could just tell us then.
We'd be right in the same place.
Yeah, we can still hear you, even though we're a squid.
With our squid ears.
Johannes is the left half of the squid.
And Tom is the middle half of the squid.
Who's the right half of the squid?
I don't know.
Is it just squid?
It's very scary.
I don't want this anymore.
We'll be right back.
How many halves does the squid have?
How many halves this squid has? Okay, bye. G'day, mates. I'm Outback Barry, genuine Australian Outback man. And I tell ya, life out in the bush is just the best. You and your mates can make shrimp on a Barbie, chuck a Yui in your fastback ute, or even king hit a doober with a bintang singlet. But out here, you have to be ready for the wildlife, and especially those dingoes. They'll eat your baby if you're not careful. That's why I'm lending my 100% Australian name to Dingo Lingo, the best smartphone app for learning the language of feral dogs. With Dingo Lingo, you can learn to talk to wild, ferocious canines in just 6 short weeks. Take Salsa here. What a lad he is. But you have no idea what he said, because you haven't used Dingo Lingo. Let's hear it again, the way somebody who had completed our course of study would.
The bourgeois elite has improperly amassed control of the means of production, exploiting the work of the proletariat and ensuring their degradation via false consciousness. We must rise up against our capitalist masters and establish a model of social control in which the workers are vested with mastery of capital.
Ain't that right, little fella? So download Dingo Lingo today, and you, too, can learn to speak with filthy mongrels in the middle of nowhere. G'day now.
Welcome back to the Larry Mayonnaise Podcast. It's time for everybody's favorite segment, Mildly Alarming Theater. Today's presentation, Hands Up My Butt for Harambe.
Recently, Tom didn't answer his phone for, like, a week, so I went over to his house to see if he was still alive. I always record these incidents in case he's kidnapped by dogs and I need to prove it in court. The following recording is 100% real and has not been altered in any way. Hello, dumbass? You down there? Your basement is disgusting. You're disgusting. Where are you? Ugh. What did... Egg salad. I stepped in a pan of old egg salad. Why is that there? Why is that anywhere? Why is my life like
this? Hey there, buddy!
Sweet Jesus, don't jump out at me like that. Also, what the hell is crusted all over your hair?
Egg salad. But it's not important. Glad you're here. I've made a discovery.
You smell like a hairless cat looks. Have you showered? Ever?
I won't lie. It's been a while. It's been 2 whiles. But come on, look. Take a look at this.
Why do you have some sort of garbage shrine to Donald Trump in your basement?
This was the first draft. I was barking down the wrong alley, but it got me on the road to my greatest discovery. The most important discovery. The most dangerous discovery.
Seriously, do you mind if I, like, Febreze you real quick? Your stench feels like I'm pressing my face into sweaty jello.
There's no time, and also I don't have any Febreze. But look, important things are afoot, and I'm in on the ground level. And that means you are also on the ground level. We're both there. We're on the ground. Well, not the ground. The level that's on the ground. That's where we are.
I got it. Okay, fine. What's so important?
Puppets.
You know, I always wondered what exactly you would do that would push me over the edge to murder, and now I know. That's information that I have.
No, wait. You'll want to hear this one out. Did you watch the third debate?
No, I was out of bleach to do shots of, because watching a debate would make me want to die.
Okay, so you didn't. Okay, quick summary. Clinton called Trump a puppet of Putin.
Strong discourse.
Okay, but check it. Check the tape.
It's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear you won't admit
no, you're
that the Russians...
How long did it take you to transfer that to an old cassette? And is this Betamax? Where did you even get this?
A Weil and Gary's house. It's not important. Did you hear what he said?
Yes.
She's the puppet.
Knowing you is just exhausting.
So maybe it's not clear just from that. Come on, come into the second room that I have in my basement.
Nothing good has ever happened in the second room of a basement.
Yet.
That is a lot of pictures you've pinned to the wall and connected together with pushpins and red vines? Twizzlers?
Both. They were on sale at different stores.
Don't you get ants?
Ants are the least of our problems, my friend. Take a look at this picture here. This is the one that blew the whole thing wide open. Just grabbed it with both hands and pulled it open so we could look inside and see what's going on. Come on, take a peek.
It's a picture of Hillary Clinton.
Look closer.
She's kind of smiling a little.
Look at her eyes.
They're kind of brownish.
They're glinting. Look at the glint. You gotta see that glint.
Here's a bit of a glint. I've seen more glint. I mean, it's not a bad glint. Give it maybe a 6 out of 10 on the Glorence Boont glintiness scale.
You're missing the forest for the trees here. Sure, it's not a great glint, but more importantly, it's not the glint of a human eye. It's the glint of glass.
So Hillary Clinton has a secret glass eye.
If only! No, look closer. See the edge of her sleeve? The shadow's all wrong for a sleeve with an arm in it, and so is the way that the fabric drapes around the non-existent wrist. But if it were a sleeve with a hand sewn to the end of it to make a reasonable facsimile of a human arm, perhaps controlled by somebody or something on the inside?
Are you saying that...
Yes. Hillary Clinton is a literal giant puppet. She is made of felt and is controlled by a series of clever hand motions.
But she's not the only picture you've got here.
Look at this one, Danny DeVito, 2012. See these three little pinpricks of light above his head? A camera flash caught his strings. The man is a marionette. Gwyneth Paltrow, puppet. Otto von Bismarck, puppet. Harambe the gorilla, killed, because that kid was a puppet. Look, here's Jeff Bezos.
The Amazon guy, right?
The Amazon puppet, more like it. Look, you can clearly see the sticks that they use to move his arms and legs around. If you watch a video of him, his mouth doesn't even move. How has anyone missed this?
Wow. I was doubtful, because you're a deeply unstable, paranoid lunatic whose home is full of hallucinogenic molds. But you've really unmasked an actual secret conspiracy here. How deep does it go?
Deep, my friend. Real deep. Trump, clearly a puppet, but so are all the Bushes, half the Senate, most of Hollywood and Silicon Valley. The list goes on and on.
Jeez. I guess there's only one thing to do then.
Wait. You're not going to reveal that you're a puppet, too, and then this segment fades out with a heavy implication that I was murdered by the puppet Illuminati for discovering their secrets?
No, I was going to suggest that we buy scissors.
Oh. Why?
No reason. I just like scissors.
Me too.
And so, Tom and Johannes took those scissors and went on to fight in the Great Puppet War, winning key victories at the Battle of Sesame Street and the Siege of Fraggle Rock, and conducting minimal police action in the neighborhood of make-believe. Sadly, the resulting decimation of the puppet population led to a dearth of quality children's programming, causing the following generation to grow into vagrants, vagabonds, and psychotic criminals. Eventually, civilization collapsed, leading into 1,000 years of darkness.
No, it didn't. That's dumb.
Quite.
Hi there. Your sign says you sell truck nuts?
Yep. Finest nuts for the finest trucks. What size are you looking for?
Well, I have a few questions first. What kind of nuts are they?
Well, we have them in all different shades and colors. Couple of sizes, too.
But what kind are they? Are they peanuts? I'm allergic to peanuts.
Wait, what?
I can have almonds, though. I love almonds.
No, they're not almonds or peanuts.
Well, what are they, then? Are they cashews? I like cashews.
No,
I just want some nuts for my truck, you know? I get so snacky driving around all day, and some truck nuts seem like just the thing.
You have a truck?
Of course I have a truck. hot almonds with it.
And that's how I got out of the fake nutsack business and into the real nutsack business. Try a sack of Coid's truck nuts in almond, cashew, or mix today. But don't eat them in a minivan or we'll break your legs.